Namaste Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from the seventh canto, chapter 15, Instructions for Civilized Human Beings, text number 21. Pandita Bhavo Rajan Bahugya Sangsaya Chida Sarasas Patayho Vyeke Asanto Sat Patanjada Pandita Bhavo Rajan Bahugya Sangsaya Chada Sarasas Patayho Vyeke Asanto Sat Patanjada Pandita Bhavo Rajan Bahugya Sangsaya Chada Sarasas Patayo Vyeke Asanto Sat Patanjada Jesus. Pandita, very learned scholars. Bahava, many. Rajan, O King Yudhisthira. Bahugya, persons with varied experience. Sangsayachida, expert in legal advice. Sarasapataya, persons eligible to become presidents of learned assemblies. Api, even, Eke, by one disqualification. Asantosat, simply by dissatisfaction or greed. Patanti, fall down. Adha, into hellish conditions of life. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki. O King Yudhisthira, many persons with varied experience, many legal advisors, many learned scholars, and many persons eligible to become presidents of learned assemblies fall down into hellish life because of not being satisfied with their positions. Purport. For spiritual advancement, one should be materially satisfied. For if one is not materially satisfied, his greed for material development will result in the frustration of his spiritual advancement. There are two things that nullify all good qualities. One is poverty, daridro dosha gunarasinasi. If one is poverty-stricken, all his good qualities become null and void. Similarly, if one becomes too greedy, his good qualifications are lost. Therefore, the adjustment is that one should not be poverty-stricken, but one must try to be fully satisfied with the bare necessities of life and not be greedy. For a devotee to be satisfied with the bare necessities is therefore the best advice for spiritual advancement. Learned authorities in devotional life consequently advise that one not endeavor to increase the number of temples and mats. Such activities can be undertaken only by devotees experienced in propagating the Krishna consciousness movement. All the acharyas in South India, especially Sri Ramanujacharya, constructed many big temples. And in North India, all the Goswamis of Vrindavan constructed large temples. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur also constructed large centers, known as the Gaudiya Mathas. Therefore, temple construction is not bad, provided proper care is taken for the propagation of Krishna consciousness. Even if such endeavors are considered greedy, the greed is to satisfy Krishna, and therefore these are spiritual activities. Om Jnanata Manandasya Jnananjana Salakaya Chakshrim Malitam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Mukam Krotva Chalang Pungun Langhaya Tegrim Yat Kripa Taraham Bande Shikurum Dinatadamam Vanchakalpa Tuyubhyascha Kripa Sundubhyevacha Paditanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasadi Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's stated, Krishna Bhakti Nishkam Mata Eva Shanta Bhukti Mukti Siddhikam Sakali Ashanta, that devotees of the Lord, they're very satisfied in Krishna consciousness. Because we have our motto, simple living and high thinking. As Prabhupada says, bare necessities. We don't need much to live. Unfortunately, throughout society, people think that if I get a lot of money, then I'll be satisfied. We get a lot of things, I'll be satisfied. And they think that if I'm a proprietor of all these things, then my goal in life will be fulfilled. Prabhupada gives an example of a boy on a beach, and he's building a sandcastle, an elaborate sandcastle. But then towards the end of the day, his father comes and says, okay, son, time to go. Let's go. But dad, don't you see what I've done here? Look, I got this. I've almost built a city here with sandcastles. It's wonderful, isn't it? Can't we stay a little longer? No. Let's go, boy. Time to go. Oh, dad, come on. No, let's go. All right. And then he goes on. And then he looks back, and a big wave comes and knocks the whole thing down. So similarly, people, they have their houses, nice houses, and their facilities, cars, and families, children, so many things. But then the Supreme Dad comes and says, all right, come on. Let's go. Time to go. But can't you just wait 4 more years? I have so many plans. Prabhupada used to say how he knew one Indian man. He was a doctor. Saw that he was, leave soon. Doctor, please, just 4 more years. You can do it. Just 4 more years. No. Time to go. Let's go. Got to leave it all behind. So we have to leave everything behind. And everything actually belongs to Krishna. Krishna is the supreme proprietor. Nothing belongs to us. Isavasyam idam sarvam yat kinchit jagatam jagat. Chena chak chena bunja kasya chan. Kasya man vekti. Kasya man vekti tantrataha. That everything that exists is owned and controlled by the Supreme Lord. Therefore, we should only take what we need as our quota and not accept more, knowing well to whom everything belongs. So everything belongs to Krishna. He's the supreme proprietor. But unfortunately, people get into this illusion that as soon as they have something in their possession, it's theirs. Even if it's a small thing, just like they have that saying that proprietorship turns sand into gold. Yeah. Even in insignificant things. Like Prabhupada was at the Howrah station in Calcutta one time, and he saw this poor man. He was carrying some burnt wood on his shoulder. And Prabhupada could see that he was very proud that he had this burnt wood. I mean, it's like nothing. But people become proud of their penny, little things. So we should understand that actually everything belongs to Krishna. But still people think that they'll be satisfied. The more they have, the more they'll be satisfied. Just like the UN, they did one study, United Nations, they did a study and found that the 300 richest people in the world have the amount of money as the 3 billion poorest people in the world. A little imbalance there. Billions. I looked on the internet yesterday. There's 157 people are billionaires. You can't even. I mean, how could you spend so much money? But they just get satisfaction. One of them has $73 billion. Their satisfaction is just to have the money in the bank. Yeah. Their pleasure. Yeah. So, and therefore they say money is the honey. And therefore people work very hard. Sometimes people, they work 14, 16 hours a day to get money. But then once they get it, then there's fear. Yeah. Who's going to take my money? A lot of anxiety. Yeah. And therefore, there's big banks. It's like previously in Europe, probably here also, the biggest buildings were the churches. I travel Europe quite a bit, and you'll see these old towns, and always the biggest church or the biggest building there is the church. Most important buildings, the church. Now, what are the biggest buildings? Yes, banks. Yes. That's the big interest. What is it? Sports stadium. No, but the highest buildings. The biggest, the widest is the sports stadium, but the highest? Banks. So this is where the interest is now. More and more money. There was one very wealthy man in India, Prabhupada, used to speak about it. Mr. C.R. Das, very wealthy man, but he wasn't happy. So one time his wife went to him and said, "Why are you so unhappy? You have so much money, you have so much facility, so many friends. I can't understand. Why are you so unhappy?" And he was looking out the window and he saw one sannyasi. And he said, "I'll be happy when I'm like him." Didn't have anything. Just roaming and preaching. He could understand that although I have so much, it's not bringing me happiness. Just like a few days ago at the Los Angeles Valley College, an interesting incident. This one lady came to my table and I was showing her the books. And I got to the karma, with the cow with a human head and human with a cow's head. And I showed that to her and she said, "Oh, very nice, I like that. I'm vegetarian." And she said, "I'll tell you something amazing that happened to me. I was in my room. I'm a poor lady, single mother, very poor. But for some reason, I just felt so happy. And I couldn't figure, why am I so happy? I don't have anything. But I'm so happy." And then she was a little bit into meditation. She started meditating. Then she started thinking, "I eat meat. And so many animals die. Must be horrible." And she started praying to all the animals. Of course, she didn't know what they were, but she felt very bad that she had been eating meat. She said, "From that moment, I stopped eating meat. I became a vegan." Of course, she took many books. So this is actually interesting that people think that I'll be happy by so much money. But there's poor people. Like if you go to South America or Central America, most people, they're God conscious. Like 95%. Isn't it? Everybody believes in God practically. Poor countries. Go to Europe. Completely opposite. 95% atheists practically. "Hey, I got money, I got facility, what do I need God for?" They tell me that sometimes when I'm preaching. "I don't need this. I'm all right. I'm good." But then we hear in this purport that poverty brings out the worst qualities. Right? If someone wants wealth and doesn't have it, then there's a law. Necessity knows no law. There's a saying, necessity knows no law. So therefore they'll beg, borrow, or steal. Get money, get ghee, get facilities. Just get whatever you can. But if one is God conscious, then poverty, it's a jewel. It's like St. Francis. He took the vow of poverty. He was born in a very wealthy family. He could have inherited so much money. But he was somehow inspired by God. He renounced it all. Took a vow of poverty. One of the most, if not the most famous Christians since the apostles. He still has a movement. The Franciscan monks all over the world. Took a vow of poverty. He was just begging whatever he needed. It was a very simple life. And the six Goswamis. Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami. They were multi-millionaires. Prime minister. One was a prime minister. What was the other one? Anybody remember? Huh? What was it? Anyway, big positions. Finance minister, yes, finance minister. Very wealthy. But they got the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and they just gave it all up. And they became mendicants, living under a different tree every night. Poverty stricken. But they're glorified for this. And they're very happy. No problem. So poverty is very good if one is God conscious. Not God conscious, then it'd be a problem. Yeah. So people think that they'll be happy by this money, but no. It's like there's so many people that win the lottery, and quite often, after they've had their money for some time, they realize this is not bringing me any happiness. My life has become miserable. Because as soon as you have a lot of money, then everybody's asking for the money. Yeah. And you gotta protect it, and there's so much anxiety. So it doesn't bring the satisfaction that one is looking for. And it's not that one is only greedy for money. Sometimes people become greedy for power. Yeah. Just like Nixon. He was the president. But he was very concerned about getting a second term. So therefore he did so many illegal things and was caught. And the only president, I think, that was ever impeached. Right? Greed. He wanted more power. He wanted to keep that. He wanted to retain that power. He wasn't satisfied. So also people, they get greedy to control. They're called control freaks. Got to get control, more and more control. So Krishna, he's the Parameshvara. He's the supreme controller. And the more we're under the control of Krishna, the more satisfied we are. It's not that we'll get any satisfaction by getting material facilities. No, it just simply causes more anxiety. But if we become puppets in the hands of Krishna, the Parameshvara, the supreme controller, then we're satisfied. This is the satisfaction of the soul. And because people don't understand this reality, that they're the soul within, they try in so many ways to satisfy the body, to satisfy the mind. But they don't know this simple reality. That we're the soul within. So we have to try to help them. And people become greedy for sense gratification. And for people, their obesity is a big problem in America and Europe also. Greed, trying to satisfy the senses. Or sex. Also, they're greedy to satisfy this sense. Therefore, there's so much rape. People are out of control. Abortion. There's about 2 million a year abortions. Out of control. Greed to satisfy the senses. And recently we had Black Friday. People just get in this frenzy. I heard people sleep overnight for 3 nights at some stores. They camp out at stores to be the first in line for Black Friday. It's crazy. They camp out around the stores to get the first. And then when the doors open, there's fights. Sometimes there's shootings. So much greed, it's crazy. Yeah. To get material things that don't bring satisfaction anyway. So this is blindness. Janaka Pandit, he says that there's four types of blindness. There's blinded by greed. There's blinded by pride. There's blinded by lust. And there's where one's eyes cannot see, blind materially. So the worst is blinded by pride. Worse than greed. But greed fuels pride. Because the more one gets, the more the pride increases. Right? So, therefore we're trying to help people understand that the real satisfaction that they're aspiring for is in service to Krishna. This is where one will be completely satisfied. And therefore, we can be greedy for service to Krishna, service to Krishna's devotees, and service to humanity. Krishna bhakti rasa bhavitamiti kriyatam yadi katopilam tetraloyam apimam janma koti sukriterna labhyate. That this love for Krishna, it cannot be attained even with millions and millions of pious births. But it can be only attained by being very desirous. It's in lolium, this word used, greed. It means an intense desire to serve Krishna. We should be greedy for this. We should pray to Krishna to have this greed, this intense desire to serve Krishna. This will bring the satisfaction. Not all this other stuff. Krishna bhakta nishkama atyeva shanta. You think that by acquiring material things they'll be happy. No. Dissatisfaction. By getting mystic yogi or mystic perfections, I'll get it. No. That won't bring satisfaction. Krishna bhakta nishkama atyeva bhukti mukti. Bhukti mukti siddhi kami sakali ashanta. Therefore, they're all dissatisfied. So we want people to be satisfied. And if we want to be satisfied, then we have to engage in this devotional service. This will please the soul. And this is who we are. Not by satisfying and trying to please this body. No, it's not going to happen. It's never happened. It's not going to happen. Because this body, it's just a vehicle for the soul. And as we heard this morning, if we chant the holy name sincerely, then we'll come to understand Krishna more and more. Because this name of Krishna, non-different. So we should pray to Krishna for this understanding, this reality, that we are the soul, that we are eternal servants of Krishna, and that by pleasing Him, we'll be satisfied. Nothing else will bring the satisfaction that we're searching for. So, on that note, is there any question or comment? Yes, Banabhatra Prabhu, I think the microphone is just now coming.
Thank you, Vijay Prabhu, for an enlightening class. My question is, you had mentioned that, it's of course mentioned in the purport, that being poverty-stricken is a detriment. You mentioned that for a devotee, it can be an asset. So I'm wondering, what would you consider to be what's the difference between being poverty-stricken and having one's bare necessities? Is there a difference?
Poverty-stricken. Well, we would definitely be considered poverty-stricken in America if we only have our bare necessities. What do they consider poverty stricken? Making, what, 20,000 a year or something? 18,000 a year, you're poverty. So, yeah, that would. If we're just getting our bare necessities, that's poverty stricken. But according to ourselves, in our society, no. I mean, will we consider the six Goswamis poverty stricken? I don't think so. And they pretty much had their bare necessities. Raghunath Das Goswami, his parents were unlimitedly, I mean, just they were so wealthy, it's just unbelievable. But he renounced it all, and he was just eating what, a little buttermilk a day, you know. So he was, and they were all living very simply. They were poverty stricken. Wait, get the microphone.
I would think that there's a difference because poverty-stricken means one who's working very hard in the material world for some kind of sense enjoyment and some kind of material assets. But as you were saying in the purport, and you were saying, really for the devotee, it's voluntarily. This is called tapasya. We're voluntarily inflicting upon ourselves a certain degree of pain in order to acquire self-realization. So you have someone like the six Goswamis you just mentioned. It's unnatural to live off a few drops of buttermilk a day. You know, this is no. Why would someone do this? Only for the cause of some, you know, spiritual realization or, you know. So in the material world, poverty-stricken means people that are out there that are living in the ghetto, let's say, for the lack of understanding, you know, just to get a clarity. They're working so hard in order to acquire something, some material asset or possession, and they can't get it. They just absolutely cannot get it. Whereas a devotee, they're coming from a very rich background, as you mentioned, but they're coming into that situation for the purpose of tapasya and for development of self-realization. And we live on that level because we want to. A poverty-stricken person really doesn't want to be there. they want something more, you know, but they're forced to be in that condition.
They can have the wealth, but they don't want it.
Yeah. They don't want it. Yeah. But a devotee wants it. A devotee accepts it as their tapasya.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Archita Prabhu.
Thank you, Vijay, and thank you, Suvas. But there's also the point, getting back to Bhanabhata's question, where is the line? The line is different for everyone. And Prabhupada made that point, that everybody's taste of salt is different. I can't force you to say, this is okay when you have just a pinch of salt. For me, maybe I need 3 pinches, and somebody else 4 pinches. So there's no absolute line about what's bare necessity. Also, when Prabhupada was constructing his Mayapur center, there's a famous morning walk. He was talking to a gentleman here. He said, for ourselves, meaning he was talking about himself, we could sit under a tree and chant. But I'm building this for my Western disciples because they're used to a different standard. And I want them to come here and to be comfortable so they can chant and, you know. So the standard is not exactly, it's not like a one line and you better be on this line, otherwise you're in Maya. No, everybody's line is a little different. So for the Western disciples, Prabhupada was constructing a big temple so they could come to Mayapur, be comfortable, chant and not be in anxiety about eating and, you know, like that, where to pass stool. And, you know, he said that actually. He said, for us, we can pass in the field. That's what we're used to. But for my Western disciples, I'm constructing this so they'll have a nice place, in essence, to pass to. You know? So everybody's line is different. You can't force somebody to be satisfied with an outhouse when that's not what they're used to. You know, they're used to indoor plumbing. So you give them indoor plumbing, and they can happily chant Hare Krishna. And if you can live in a tree, like some devotees try that, even when Prabhupada is here, Prabhupada says it's artificial, and sure enough, they didn't last. One devotee wanted to live in a tree and just chant all day, and Prabhupada gave him permission, okay. But he said it wouldn't last, and it didn't last, because that's not what we're used to. It's not where we're coming from. So find that line wherever it is for you. Everybody's going to be different. Some devotees can eat once a day and be happy. Other devotees have to eat 3-4 times a day before they're happy. But the idea is don't eat and then go back to sleep. Work hard for Krishna. Prabhupada said, if you should eat like a bird, eat like a bird. Don't eat like a horse. But if you eat like a horse, then work hard for Krishna. Don't eat like a horse and go sleep all day.
Thank you, Archita Prabhu. Bhanabhata again.
I just thought of something. I guess on the highest platform, a devotee who's actually surrendered to Krishna, actually possesses Krishna, no matter what may be the situation appear like materially, he couldn't be poverty-stricken because Krishna is full of all six opulences.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, Savasrabhu, again, back to Savas. Here we go.
Panavatapur just reminded me that I did read something in Sixth Canto not too long ago, and where it said, there's a verse that says that the Supreme Lord is possessed by a devotee who wants no material profit from the Supreme Lord. Mm. And in the same way, because of that, Krishna is even more captured by the devotee, although he's unconquerable. He is actually conquered by a devotee who wants no material gain and no material profit from the Supreme Lord.
Yeah.
So that's really our wealth, as Bhanabhata Prabhu was saying. Because if you capture the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I mean, come on.
You're the wealthiest. Yeah, you're the richest.
That's eternality. And that's forever in happiness and satisfaction. You don't want anything any more than that. So really, this is our quest. So if we ourselves don't execute Krishna consciousness, we're not going to get that happiness. We will be poverty stricken if we do not accept and execute the process or the science of Krishna consciousness, because we won't be able to capture Krishna.
Mm.
You know, we won't be able to acquire what we
want. Yeah, if we want material wealth, then we miss out on the real wealth.
Yeah, I mean, even as a devotee, we can be. I mean, there's stories when I was many years back. There were stories of a devotee that was really executing Krishna consciousness very nicely, very happy. But then he got some meager inheritance from his family. I think he got something like $50,000. Of course, this was quite some time back. And as soon as he got that 50 G's, the next day, his locker was emptied out. And
gone.
He was gone for a meager $50,000. You know, and so really, there you go. You know, he's just, he didn't understand what the real purpose was of being in Krishna consciousness. We strive for getting rid of material desires, but that can only be manifest by better chanting, hearing, serving, and taking Krishna prasad unlimitedly.
Jai. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.